Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a prison.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, definitely not YouTube with this guest, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate it. Thank you so much to our sponsors that support the show. Chemical Free Body has been fantastic. We love them. Their products are great. I took the 90-day total energy and detox bundle, which Tim James describes as a detox clinic and nature in a box. It really did a number on me. I lost a lot of weight. I wasn't trying to lose weight. Didn't think I had weight to lose, but it just made my body a whole lot more efficient. I think people should check it out. You should go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. You can watch a short little video I did. You can read up about this stuff. See if it's right for you. If it is, pull the trigger on your way out the door. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. And look, we've talked about getting prepared. Preparing your body is part of this. It's really crucial. You want to be in good health, especially as we start to get into these. We head into the winter months here in the Northern Hemisphere. Start to think about these things. Take some preventative measures and be a step ahead instead of trying to play catch up. And as well, let's talk about prepping with My Patriot Supply. They've been fantastic to us. They've given us a landing page, our own personal one called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can check that out. They've got kits for a 4-week supply of food, also a 3-month supply of food. I think that this is one of those situations where you're better off just buying one of these packet, one of these kits, knowing that it's taken care of once it gets delivered to you, put it somewhere safe. Don't make a big deal out of it. Don't freak out your family, but just know that you've got it in case you need it. Call it hurricane food, call it an earthquake supply kit, whatever, however you want to brand it so that it doesn't sound too ominous to your family. I think it's worth taking advantage of now. Definitely with supply chain issues, you want to have it. We don't know what these maniacs have planned for us for the winter months. We know it's probably not going to be good. You'll feel a whole lot better if you know you've got this taken care of. So look, whether you go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and buy it from them, or you prep on your own and you just start thinking about this stuff and going to the grocery store and buying bigger quantities, just do something. Please just do something. You're going to want to be a month or two early rather than a day late on this. Believe me, you saw what happened with toilet paper. These maniacs out there, you're going to have to fight them for food. No, thank you. Be strategic about this. Take the additional step of getting yourself ready. And well, you know, we've talked about 9/11 for a while. We've got the 9/11 issue or episode here. And when it comes to finding the right guest for this, it wasn't much of a choice to me. He is the producer and writer of Loose Change, one of the most transformative documentaries I've ever seen. It quite literally changed my life. He is a documentary filmmaker. He's a truth teller. He's a badass. I'm talking about Jason Burmes. Hey, Jason, it's good to see you. I wish we were talking about donuts and unicorns and sprinkles and rainbows instead of 9/11. But this is it. This is the most important event in our lifetimes. You were there. You had a front row seat to this. You then took the additional step of turning this into a documentary that woke up a huge number of people to what was going on. First of all, thank you for doing that. And second of all, I'd love to get your impressions on 9/11, what that meant to you, how that day played out, and why, of all the things in our lives that sort of grip us and get us excited, why was it 9/11 for you?
Well, it's the preemptive issue. It's really the event that gets us to where we are today, Charlie, right? It's the one that really empowers the security state, takes away so many of those visual checks and balances, and has been that slow burn into what we now know as signature reduction, which 99.99% of the populace still has no idea exists. And for anybody that doesn't understand what signature reduction is, it's apparently an art form by our national security apparatus, our military industrial complex, as to where they hire 60,000 people that are operational. They are fully unaccountable. They carry out both foreign and domestic operations in this country. And they have all sorts of nice little classified DARPA goodies to work with. If that doesn't frighten people, it should, because it was really pre-9/11 that the same clique that brought you Homeland Security and so much more that ends up enabling this really brings you the new continuity of government or shadow government program through the National Programs Office. All the players are there, the Wolfowitzes of the world, the Rumsfelds of the world, the Cheneys of the world. And, you know, so this has been a long, slow burn to get rid of those checks and balances, that constitutional republic, a judicial, executive, and a legislative, into really one super techno corporate fascist globalist ideal. I wouldn't even call it a state at this point, right? They don't even need, you know, the full on, we've announced it, we have the new world order, the global government. More like we have all the power, right? We can just censor you when we want. We have the military. We create the laws. There are no checks and balances. We're the ones that audit the votes or don't audit the votes. We've seen it all in real time. They've even restricted our medicine. And that all stems from our inability to confront what was right in front of everybody's face, Charlie. I feel kind of blessed to be a part of that. And now, you know, blamed to be, one of the godfathers of the quote unquote disinformation age. So many mainstream media outlets have tried to do that. I expect the same thing out of the New York Times. I did a 2-hour interview with them. You know, Dylan won't even talk to these people anymore. And I can't really blame him. No. Because Dylan, you know, he made a movie because it was the concerning issue of the day as you started looking at this stuff. And, you know, I guess I'll get into the first day a little later, but I start looking into this stuff and you see how bad it is. And you realize, well, on top of us doing this and us being lied to, we're expanding this war into the Middle East unjustly. And we're creating black sites like Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib. And you're feeding the monster and you're doing all these unconscionable things at the behest of, you know, 3,000 plus of our brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, cousins, friends, dead. Okay. And I just wasn't down with it. You know, I don't play pretend very well. It was very, very upsetting to me. And, you know, I always say this, I'm no truther. I've always just wanted the truth. And, you know, that's kind of a slang term that the media went with after conspiracy theorist wasn't as effective because, you know, Dylan, I, Corey, we weren't really of the mantra 9/11 was an inside job. I was making T-shirts that said investigate 9/11, ask questions, demand answers. And so many of these questions weren't being asked. And we got to that point where some people were asking, but it was diffused with this idea that, you know, Barry Sotero was going to save everybody, the Barack star, you know, it was hope and change. And I really believe the powers that be were very, very smart. They saw how successful the actual 9/11 truth movement was. You know, hope and change, that was a ripoff of Luke Radowski and We Are Change. Make no mistake about it. That went nationwide. They saw how people were making their own chapters, how change, be the change you want to see in the world. They ran with that. They got some hipster artist. Remember that? Shepard Fairey to do it up. This huge PR campaign behind them. That was one way they did it. I always tell people the original Tea Party movement had nothing to do with Sean Hannity and the right wing and conservatives. It was libertarians, Ron Paul Republicans that had latched on to 9/11 truth. And if anybody wants to go see it, I believe it was back either in 2007 or 2008, but it was prior to the regular Tea Party. And remember, back then, people like Sean Hannity were calling Ron Paul Paltards, right? Rand wasn't in the picture. They were smearing this guy. And we were out at San Francisco with a giant 9/11 commission report with huge Swiss cheese holes in it with a bunch of people in revolutionary regalia, you know, at a Tea Party event. And that was not even the first one. You know, I would say, I believe it was Carolyn Brulé who used to put those together. So they piggybacked on that as well. And that got co-opted. And, you know, you could argue even into the hopium era of Trump and imagination land posts on message boards and secret indictments that never were and Guantanamo Bay interrogations and executions that never happened. Okay. And
Trump's gonna reveal 9/11. He knew it was an inside job. He's gonna talk all about it. Remember all that?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is the guy probably knows we were lied to. He's not a moron. And
he's aware. I mean, he knows
something's up. On the first day, he questions whether the buildings were blown up or not. Right. And on top of that, here's the thing, man. You know, all these people talk out of both sides of their mouth, and then they're never really questioned by the press when they go along with the military-industrial complex. That's why he was asked about Assange a total of one time. And nobody had a follow-up when he said, I don't know much about it. Really? You don't? Because you ran on loving the WikiLeaks, couldn't get enough of the WikiLeaks. Have you seen the... And you don't know much about it, really.
Yeah. Julian, who? Julia, what? Wiki what? Yeah. All of a sudden, he got real dumb as soon as he got into office when it came to WikiLeaks and anything having to do with exposing terror plots.
Yeah. And Saudi Arabia, you know, he gave that hint. Maybe we will find out. And he was hinting at the Saudi Arabians. And then one of the first moves in office was to cut that $400 billion plus arms deal and keep going along with Yemen and our NATO partners and basically conducting war anywhere his buddies in the military industrial complex wanted. Right. James Mattis, not your friend. John Bolton's not your friend. All these guys were monsters that had been around even in that neocon era. Pompeo, Bill Barr, especially. I mean, if you thought Bill Barr was going to save you, my God. But, you know, kind of circling back to 9/11, man, it is that event. It's that event that put people under this hypnotic trance that lets all that happen. And even as people question it, they don't know what to do. They want to believe in superheroes. Some people fall too far down the rabbit hole where they're just led in a telephone game. They don't really do their research, right, Charlie? They just all of a sudden give a retweet or, put it on a forum, whether that's malicious or not. I mean, I warned all these people about the QAnon sense. I warned them all. Like day one, I mean, I know how many Union of the Unwanted that you were on back in the day, in the very beginning of it, while there was still some hope that this was a real thing with those guys. I'm just like, guys, have your come to God moment now.
Yeah. That stuff is, but that all comes, like you said, all of this stuff sprouts out of 9/11, out of the post 9/11 world. You know, you might say, well, how's that connected to 9/11? Well, when you start to realize the Department of Homeland Security, the Patriot Act, TSA, all these things that didn't exist before now exist because of 9/11. You find that 9/11 was this gift that keeps on giving to the establishment and to the security state, because as long as they've got this invisible boogeyman, well, then he could be around that corner, and they're coming to get you, and you should be scared, and you will take care of it, but you're going to have to give us, yes, you gave us a blank check to go into all these wars, and yes, we took away your rights, but we're going to need to take away even more of them, but it's for your own safety. So there is it's important for people, even, COVID, people go, oh, well, this is the COVID era. Yes, it is. But look at how the fingerprints of 9/11 and COVID, there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of similarities. So when we go back to, people are dealing with COVID right now and 9/11's in the past, but I keep reminding people, hey, you've got to understand 9/11 if you're going to understand COVID, right?
Well, it's the original cancel culture in the sense it was the first thing to go viral and then be heavily, heavily attacked. Yes. And then if you did start questioning things, your job was threatened. They didn't fire you then, right? But they moved you around a bit. Let me give you some examples of celebrities out there. Rosie O'Donnell was one of the first people to ask about these controlled demolition possibilities about 9/11. And they were going to have us on, and then we weren't going to be on. And then Alex got on. Certain narratives had to be followed, right? The History Channel had us on. It was a total smear piece, right? I was allowed to debate Popular Mechanics on Democracy Now!, but later in the day when I was supposed to be on Glenn Beck, back when he was on CNN, they canceled us. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. Charlie Sheen was smeared for trying to be involved in the project whatsoever and fell through as somebody who was going to actually voice the thing. Mark Cuban was smeared for daring to say that he might distribute the film if we were to put it out. Virgin Airlines, Richard Branson had it on his planes for 2 days before the media went crazy and they pulled it off. I mean, Bill O'Reilly was coming after us. Rush Limbaugh was coming after us. It's so funny. Today in my Twitter feed, I saw Noam Chomsky had said something basically where he's saying, hey, just, we need to segregate these people from society that don't want to take shots from big tech and DARPA. I knew he was a sellout during 9/11. I go, this guy's trying to now manufacture consent for medical martial law. Okay. But this isn't ironic. I saw his true colors in 9/11 when he wouldn't even look at those issues and what he was saying then.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody post, oh, I wonder how many right-wing talking points you've fallen for. I'm like, brother, you got no idea who I am. Right-wing, are you out of your fucking mind? Right. Right-wing talking points? I don't even know what planet we're on. I hate all these people. I came out of literally, going after Bush era politicians, Bush two era politicians, really a lot of them carried over. So really Bush politicians, they were installed in that network under Reagan where, Reagan, the actor president gets in, starts talking a little too much shit. And then he gets shot by a guy whose family not only knows the Bushes, but his brother the next night after he got shot was supposed to have dinner with Neil Bush.
Right.
Nothing to see here.
No. I'm just a coincidence theorist, right?
And that guy's not in jail, by the way. And he's got a YouTube channel and he's putting out songs. And you think I'm kidding? You go type in John Hinckley right now on YouTube. The man that shot Reagan is.
He's going to be the next episode after you on this. No, I'm just kidding. I might as well reach out to him. Why not? Right. It's going to be a double episode. Him and Sirhan.
Charlie, that would be epic if you got John Hinckley Jr. on. I would love to hear that, because, you know, again, Hinckley, you know, according to this one little small news piece that I have, he was taking phone calls over at a payphone down the road. It's very suspicious what happened there with Reagan. I mean, again, you know, people understand that this is supposed to be about 9/11, and you know, I'll go back to that first day and all these other things, but they are interconnected, and that's kind of why
of course.
You know, I wasn't done after Loose Change. You know, I wasn't done after Fabled Enemies. I mean, you look at Fabled Enemies now, and although the production value might not be, you know, it's not high def, but it stands up to anything the History Channel's ever done. Only it tells you the truth, and it's got, you know, Joe Biden before he's even the vice president, copping to, you know, covering up $100,000 wire to Muhammad Atta from the Pakistani ISI, you know, twice copping to it on video. And he's the president. I mean, he's not running anything at this point. And he's probably, you know, everybody's on Joe, Zombie Joe, about like, keep looking at his watch. Dude, he was probably checking to see how long he had till he shit himself.
Yeah, like, yeah. How much time do I have left on this planet? I mean, can I please, like, get out of here?
I don't want to poop myself here because I know I got to walk with it. Give the guy a break. I can't even believe they're rolling him out at this point. Like, don't get me wrong. That guy is an evil gangster and a total minion of these motherfucking predator class predators for sure, man. Uh-huh. But like, it's over. He's shot. Like, did you see, even when he yesterday blamed the what happened in New York, Ida, on climate change, I can't wait to do the video. He called it the climate crisis. He can't speak. He can't talk. The climate crisis, Joe.
These people, though, you know, we laugh at them, and they're laughable, and they're cartoonish in their behavior, and they keep getting caught doing crazy things. And he's got a son that's on video smoking crack cocaine. I mean, you can't make this up. And it would be laughable if it wasn't so goddamn serious, because guys like Joe Biden, when he was at his peak performance, was a dangerous sociopath. I mean, he is a very, very dangerous individual. He wants you, I mean, if we lived in his version of reality from like the 80s, when if he was able to bring that to fruition right now, it would be a police state like we've never seen before. Because in Joe Biden's mind, everybody's a criminal. They just haven't been convicted yet.
I mean, they're already talking about putting breathalyzers in all cars by 2030. Right. I mean, that's insanity. You know, I can't even. So now I have to prove I'm innocent to get into my car. They want everything on the grid. You see what's happening in Australia right now. Real time access to all your stuff. Apps that make you check in with the state. Okay, when you're under quarantine, even though you're a healthy individual, this isn't new. And you know, that's why Invisible Empire, New World Order Defined is out there. That's why Shade the Motion Picture is out there. You watch Shade the Motion Picture. Shade. I think it was 2013. Okay. Yeah. I dedicated 20 minutes to Bill Gates then. And you look at that film and what he said he was going to do, you know, like you said before this, you know, believe them when they say it.
When they tell you what they're going to do, believe them. I know we get in this place where we go, anything that the politicians say is a lie. And most of the time it is. But from time to time, they tell you what the plan is. And you just have to listen. I mean, it's frustrating to me because, over the last 20 years, I've been conditioned to just be very distrustful of all of these politicians, but I've had to get better at listening to the things that they actually do say that slip out from time to time that are the truth. And if you can sift through all the horse shit that they say and find those little nuggets, they will actually tell you what they're going to do, because they're being told this is what you have to get done. So then they're relaying the message to us, this is how it's going to roll out. I mean, you can watch Justin Castro Trudeau right now and see a perfect example of that. He's a pathological liar and a sociopath of the highest order, but he's also telling you the truth about what they're doing. And so it's very scary. And of course, so let's bring this back to 9/11 for a second. So you get, you're a New York guy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Upstate New York. So, all right. So let's get into the morning of 9/11, right?
Let's get into the morning of it. Yeah.
So I'm 22 at the time. Okay. I just dropped out of college. I'm living with two of my fraternity brothers and I'm working at the pizza shop late night. Basically, that's like my full-time gig. And I worked late night. I think I worked to like 3 or 4 in the morning. So I was very, you know, one of those guys going to bed at sunup all the time, you know, nightlife, that kind of thing. And my two roommates are Long Islanders. You know, this is up in Oneonta, New York. So it's a college town. So you had a bunch of kids from the city, but mostly Long Island. And then, so like if their parents had made it in the city, they live out in Long Island. That's the deal there. And then there was a private school named Hartwick University next to it. And that's where you get like your East Coast rich Connecticut kids. So very much that group that was affected by this. And I remember my roommate, my buddy Joe, comes in, wakes me up, and he goes, dude, the towers are gone. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that obviously doesn't register.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you talking about, man? He's like, the Twin Towers are gone. He's like, planes flew into them and they blew up. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Right.
So I, you know, this is again 2001. So this is the era of, I think we got about 65 channels and like maybe DVR, right? Like maybe DVR for like 40 hours. That's what you get.
Right.
So I have no idea. This is probably about 11 a.m. Like I said. So I get downstairs. And, you know, I remember I didn't take a shower or anything. I just kind of threw whatever on. I start watching the news and I watch the towers come down and immediately out of my mind, you know, and this is before there were a ton of videos out there of the planes hitting the buildings. Right. You know, so you were only seeing on replay like the dark, you know, it wasn't the close up shots you got later and stuff like that. So every once in a while you see that. And I'm just like, this is not making sense to me, you know, because they were gone. Everything's not making sense. But whatever, we're just in wild times, so who knows? So I step out the back, you know, to go do my daily routine, to go grab a coffee and see what's going on. And my neighbor is already outside screaming, "Motherfucking Bin Laden!" And I'm like, "Well, geez." I go, dude. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, it's got to be him." I go, "Well, how do you know?" "Well, these Muslims fucking hate us," and da 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 da. And I go, "Well." And I specifically remember saying this. I'm like, well, wasn't it like a crazy white guy at Oklahoma City? Well, you know, wasn't McVeigh a white guy? I'm like, couldn't it be anybody?
Right.
And you know, he's like, no, and all of my brains is going haywire at this point. Right. I'm not sure what to believe. I'm not sure what to think, but I'm certainly not thinking anything like nefarious, like inside job or anything like that. Okay. I want to make that extremely clear. So I initially have my questions and all these narratives are being thrown at me for sure. But the next thing I really remember is just how absorbed I was in the 24-hour news cycle, because all channels, everything from MTV to Nick at Night were running 24-hour news. There was nothing else on. There was no other option out there if you were actually switching through the TV. It was either that or I believe, you know, within the first week, they had that big celebrity event where I think it was for the Red Cross that ended up stealing all that money. Remember that? They had all those celebrities. So there was a shared reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was no blogs or sites that I was on. I hadn't found InfoWars or anything like that that I was going to that was feeding me any other information. This is long before anybody could post on a video platform, let alone, you know, if you were posting on video platforms, you basically had links to like ASF or WMV files or, you know, MP4s weren't really around, right? It was like MPEGs and all these other things, very compressed. People weren't doing it. So, you know, initially I just kind of bought into everything, right?
I think at that moment, that was the most unified the country has ever been in the moments right after 9/11, before we had a chance to sort of sift through all this. There was like a collective, we're all in this together. Like that, I felt that for a second. Like I felt like, wow, like we were all, it was like very, almost like when you have an earthquake and everybody goes, like I'm from Southern California, you have a big earthquake, everybody goes outside and then you're all standing out there with your neighbors and you have this shared experience of going through this trauma together and you feel kind of connected to one another. Even though they're strangers, you just feel like, all right, we all kind of went through this together. That was how the nation was like for a day or two. And everyone was like, wow, we're all sort of like brothers and sisters trying to like make sense of this all. And then that ended.
Well, I mean, you know, especially on that day, cell phones were out too, right? Cell phones, first of all, weren't that big. All right. So, you know, I didn't get my first flip phone until like 2004. It wasn't even a flip phone. It was one of those like pad phones or whatever.
Nokia, but a lot of people. Things.
Oh, you got something going on? I'm sorry. No, yeah, but the so cell phones were down. I had so many people that couldn't get in touch with their parents. There was a lot of freak out moments, right? You know, and then a lot of people had lost people that were aunts, uncles, friends, family down there as well. You know, so that I mean, especially in that area, even in upstate, people, you're right. They were all like kind of on the same page, right? There wasn't much to question. Bin Laden did it, Afghanistan, you know, yada, yada, yada. Early on, I do remember there were a couple pieces that kind of slipped through the cracks that made me question things a little bit and the networks of these things. And I remember specifically how the media was laying out these elaborate underground tunnels and bunkers that they said that these people had and all these things that you were buying into. And remember, this was well before the color-coded terror message and we were going to Iraq and Saddam Hussein. It was really after, you know, we dominate Afghanistan and then the Iraq stuff starts, you know, echoing in here. You know, we're 6 months into this. We're closing in on a year. You start hearing this stuff. We're going to have to go into Iraq. All these other things are not making sense, right? And that's where kind of the narratives are twisting in my head. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know. You know, maybe there's something more to it. Like, why would we want to go in there? We're trying to finish what Daddy, you know, all these kind of like pseudo narratives that are out there. We're finishing what Daddy Bush wanted to do in the Persian Gulf War. You know, that's my first televised war. Also, another huge moment and experience in my life and my generation. And it gets to the point where there are a couple things I see. First thing is when Le Pentagate came out. And this was a book by Thierry Masson. It was out in France. And Fox and Friends was on. It was in the morning news. Now, I want to say this. It wasn't like I was just watching Fox News. I was watching everything. You know, MSNBC. I mean, I kind of even got hooked a little bit on the 24-hour cycle in the Lewinsky scandal. You know, I printed out all of Bill's testimony at college, all of it. I had a, you know, I was interested in politics.
Right.
So we get to this and all these guys are bashing this. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy's saying a plane didn't hit the Pentagon. These fucking French assholes will say anything. Mm-hmm. He's saying it's a government conspiracy. So my initial time that I hear of like a possible government conspiracy, I'm not only receptive, I'm kind of repulsed. Right. I'm actively angry. The next time I hear about something, I'm hearing, you know, basically somebody asking the question, what happened to our Air Force and where were these planes and why didn't we intercept any of these planes? What happened there? And it was on MSNBC. And I remember, okay, that's a question I should probably ask. Right. But again, in passing kind of goes through. It is not until I actually go to my old high school, which was about an hour away. Really small school. I graduated like 50 kids, right? 54 to be exact. And a couple of my friends, you know, I'm a beauty school dropout. They went through it. They just got their teaching degree. They were doing their initial stuff at the schools. So they were working there. I was coming by to play men's night basketball in the school I used to suit up for soccer and all these other things. And it was the little kids school. Okay. It wasn't the high school. And like in the area it was, usually you'd have like, I don't know, maybe max like 12 years old in there. Maybe, you know, other than the athletes that would come in. So up to 18, I guess, but you'd have little kids in there all the time. And I went to go take a piss and in the urinal was Osama bin Laden's face. And it said Operation Enduring Freedom. And anybody can look these up. They had these bin Laden urinal like thing captures. And I'm pissing on bin Laden's face in a school. And I'm sitting there. And goddamn, I just had a fucking moment where I was just like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm like, I don't really know who the fuck this guy is. I know that my government's pretty fucking crooked. You know, I already knew about MK Ultra. I'd watched the men who killed Kennedy. I always figured, you know, I always thought it was like a cover, the Castro stuff and the mafia stuff. I was like, our government definitely killed him. But I thought because, you know, I'd been brainwashed that fucking America was the best thing since breakfast and they had to kill him because he was a shithead. Right. Like I really believe these things. I remember I was at Woodstock in 99. I turned 20 there and I was just so encapsulated by all the Americanized propaganda. I was screaming stupid shit like this ain't Russia because remember, they were the enemy before the terrorists.
Right. Yeah, of course.
All the freedom in the world and blah, blah, blah. And just sitting there for like 90 seconds peeing on the face of the most evil man in the world. I go, I better make sure this motherfucker did this. I better make sure. And so I remember that night, you know, got done with basketball, drove an hour home, and like all I wanted, you know, I said to myself, Jason, we don't want to be biased. You know, you want to just make this as, you know, you don't want to type in 9/11 conspiracy or something stupid. Get a timeline of the entire day and see if there's anything there. Cause I remember I had that thought in my head about the Air Force and whether or not they got there in time. That was probably initially why I said, get a timeline, like do a little due diligence.
Right.
So
imagine that, right?
Yeah. 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 That's all just a timeline of the day. You don't know much. You know what you saw on TV. Let's see if we can get like a timeline that's going to lay out everything that happened that day. So I find this website called, and I bet you it's still up there. Let's see if we can find it, Charlie. It's 911timeline.net. I'll be disappointed if it's down because to me, it's timeless. And, you know, I still recommend it to people. Let's see if it's there. Come on, baby. Do it. Do it.
Now it just takes you to Pfizer.com.
Oh, it is there. And the Love Earth Network exists.
Nice.
So I literally found this. Okay. Now, if you see this, meow, pretty extensive, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty long right there. But all it really is, other than this very, very top part, okay, is the most comprehensive. He puts these five things, and then that's it. We start right there, the timeline.
What's the website address again so people can check it out?
Yeah, 911 timeline, 911, the numbers, timeline.net. Okay, so okay. As you can see, it is 12 a.m. right here, okay, right there. They start at 12 a.m., and they legit end at 12 a.m. Now, you know, this is the day of the tube screen and all that other stuff. And I literally printed the whole thing out, 40 pages. It was like 40 pages. And I'm like, well, I'm not in college. Let's do some homework, you know?
Right.
So I start going through this thing and there's just question I'm having after question. First of all, the first five things that they lay out even before the timeline kind of opened my mind a little bit. That's interesting. Wow, the flights were that empty? Wow, that's really weird. I mean, I've been on planes before, especially in the morning. They're usually not that empty, especially big ones like that. Oh, we spend that much on defense outside of everybody else? And, you know, these first things were pretty important. But I go through that thing and I'm just like, so then there's a sister site called Stand Down, 911standdown.net. That's basically just about the military response. And I get there and that's it, man. Snowballs from there. Everything they had there, you know, I bet you have to go in the Wayback Machine for some of the links now,
yeah, okay.
But everything was mainstream news. And that tumbled me down this rabbit hole that we had really been lied to about 9/11. And I hate to oversimplify it, but the best way I can describe as to what really happened on 9/11 is not an inside job. You know, that is a very simplification and we don't live in a simple world. If you look at what's happening right now, obviously we have global coordination in what we're seeing with this COVID-1984 scenario. Guess what? Global coordination for 9/11. And this is an international intelligence operation with visible players in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Israel, here in the United States, period.
That's exactly how I laid it out in the monologue episode of 9/11 I put out. When people say it's an inside job, I always correct them and say it's an inside and outside job. It wasn't limited to just being on the inside. It wasn't just us. It wasn't just them. It was a group. And the fact that, I mean, if you look at all the moving parts of 9/11, the fact that they actually pulled it off the way they did, yes, they made a ton of mistakes and things that we picked up and we've had real questions about, but the fact that they were able to pull it off at all is amazing, because you start when you're mentioning the Air Force's response and things like that. Like, those moves had to be made well in advance. Cheney taking over control and being able to allow, you know, being in charge and being able to send jets in different directions. You when you lay it out on a big
doomsday planes, Charlie, on the scene of both the Pentagon and the World Trade Center in video. These are command centers.
Yep.
These are high-level military personnel. They're on the scene, but our fighter jets aren't.
Right.
These are huge questions that were never asked. The E-4Bs themselves, although, we have visual identifiers, we see that they are there, have never been admitted to. You know, the idea that I've been debunked on any level is a sick joke. You know, I'll take on anybody. I'll debate anybody anytime, especially on this subject. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that try to troll and get in there. When I say anybody, obviously I go with the mainstream narrative. You know, I have no interest with people that are going to be hyperbolic and want to tell me exactly how this happened. You know, I try as much as possible just to put the questions out there that are contradictory and the evidence that's out there that's contradictory and let people. And then I say, look, I don't really have the funds the Department of Justice does or the FBI. I don't, but I can show you all this stuff and I can show you where to investigate. And I can say that this actually happened and we can look at this video and say, that's actually there. Could we do a real investigation? And to speak to where that is 20 years later, I just find it extremely frightening that a guy like Spike Lee, right, can put together a documentary series. I haven't watched any of it yet, but I haven't agreed with Spike on a lot of things, especially as of late. But I knew Spike Lee had watched the original Loose Change, right? The one I wasn't even involved with. He had like the original one. We talked about that while we were making the second one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for him to, you know, openly say he believes that the towers were brought down in a controlled demolition. And he hopes that this last part of his film will bring in a new congressional investigation into the matter. Well, that's great. But then to have to go back into the editing room, whether he takes that part out or not, just shows that he has to get rid of his original vision due to pressure. Well, yeah. You know, we can only hope he made it stronger, but I don't have a great feeling about it, right? I'll give Spike credit. He was one of the few people to ask the question during Katrina that's long gone of whether the levees were blown. You know, when he did that in his Katrina documentary series, he asked that question. He let people talk about that. So look, I don't think anybody's perfect. But now we live in a culture where, you know, that although that Katrina thing was a little bit under the radar, it was allowed to go on. He wasn't smeared for it. During the JFK era, more questions were allowed to be asked. In fact, it was around that 25th anniversary when Oliver Stone makes the film that even more questions about JFK are asked. I see the complete opposite about 9/11, right? And that's very troublesome. It's very troublesome because, it's no joke, folks. I don't sit up here with any glee to tell you factually, what we were told about 9/11 is a fictional lie that has been used both foreign and domestically to enslave humanity. If you want to know what they did over in Afghanistan, it wasn't just a 20-year quagmire. They got to play with a lot of toys. They got to run their biometrics program. Okay, they got to put drones in the sky. You know, those same predator drones you're now seeing in Australia surveilling the people. Yeah, guess where they were first? Afghanistan. So, you know, you got to look at the big picture because there's a big picture to look at. And I know it's tough. You want to watch your baseball. And hey, I'm a huge UFC guy. And I know that you were in sports entertainment for a long time, Charlie. And there's time for those things. But again, if anything, the last 18 months have shown us they'll take those things at any moment. They're trying to take those things actively. They're making you acquiesce to all this authoritarianism. It's not one shot. It's not two shots. It ain't three. It's not four. It's not five. It's forever. And you're still going to wear the slave mask when they want. And if you don't think this is globally coordinated and 9/11 is not connected, please watch my films. They're all free. They're there. You know, I want them out there. And hopefully, you know, a lot of people that do watch my stuff kind of get it. Yeah. They start putting it together. They go, I didn't want to listen to this fucking guy, but geez, it's right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was telling the story of how crazy the universe is that I get invited to a wedding, and I go by myself. I don't know anybody at the wedding. It's in a totally different state. I fly there. I get to the wedding. It's a beautiful place. Having a beer. Where's my table for dinner? Okay, you're going to be seated right here. And I get seated at my table and I'm seated next to Richard Gage of all people. And I'm like, I wrote a chapter in my book about you. And he's like, oh, really? That's fascinating. We wound up talking about 9/11 for hours. I get him invited to Mexico to an Acapulco and I see him there. Same thing. So the building 7, it was what I talked to him the most about. When people ask me, what woke you up to all of this stuff? I always say 9/11 in general, but Building 7 in particular. And I'm also quick to say that it didn't happen on the day of 9/11. I did not have it all figured out. I did not, you know, I was fully involved in, I was fully in the mainstream narrative for about the first, 2 years or so. Then it started to crack, and once I discovered Building 7, and part of that came from these documentaries that I saw that I would have never obviously seen on the mainstream media, it really kind of, it snapped me out of this. I thought, okay, well, hang on a second. We've got a gigantic flaw. What was it about 9/11 to you that really woke you up, that caught your attention and you said, hang on a second, this is inconsistent with reality? Was it the planes, the military jets not being anywhere nearby? Was it the fact that Osama bin Laden was pegged as the guy within the first 15 minutes by Ehud Barak and L. Paul Bremer? Like, what was it for you that woke you up to this?
Well, certainly when I first started, and like I said, that website, one of the first things they talk about is General Mahmoud Ahmed. In that meeting with Porter Goss and Bob Graham, the people that head up the initial congressional 9/11 investigation, and being the money man to Otto the week before. You know, I remember reading that. And I'm just like, that's wild. And, you know, Pakistan wasn't on the radar at all in the mainstream, right? We weren't at war with Pakistan. So that really got me going. Now, I went to school for graphics. You know, that's why I run my own show. I'm very lucky. You know, I've been able to kind of utilize technology beyond, you know, what was available, obviously, then. But then I was on all the file share networks, right? Before torrenting. Torrenting didn't come around until like 2004. So I was on Kazaa and Morpheus and Notella and Nutella, LimeWire much later, BearShare once in a while. I was downloading as much footage as I could. And yeah, I started coming across the Building 7 stuff. And yeah, I started coming across the controlled demolition of the tower stuff. And even the possibility of the planes that hit the buildings being drones, right? You had these war games going on. There was footage out there. I remember Let's Roll 911.org and Phil Jahan, they were out there as well. And, you know, that was one of the first ways that I even learned about the original Loose Change at all, because they were kind of pumping that film because it dealt with that subject matter. So all those things together, right? It was a culmination and a combination. I'll tell you this. It got taken a step further when probably a few months into me looking for everything, right? Like I said, I was on those file share networks and just scouring. I found Alex Jones, The Road to Tyranny, 911, The Road to Tyranny. Now, this he made this, I think, 6 months to a year after 9/11, right? Mm-hmm. And it was this 2+ hour movie. Horrible quality, real media player. Remember Real Media?
Yeah.
And it was out of sync audio. And he didn't have quite the grovel, but he had a really annoying redneck voice. Like, right. This is like early 20s Alex. Yeah. And, you know, I'm watching it and he keeps talking about the New World Order. And, you know, I liked it when he said global elite. When I hear New World Order, I'm thinking to myself, I grew up religious as a kid, very Christian on the side, Mark of the Beast stuff, microchip stuff that I think is fear-mongering. New World Order, I used to hear, but I used to all think it was a conspiracy theory, right? Thought Satanism was a joke. Thought it was the goth kid that couldn't get laid in high school wearing eye makeup.
Me too, man. I thought it was all nonsense and you know, easily dismissible. But turns out it's not.
I watched that film and I'm like, I'll prove this motherfucking redneck wrong. So, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, that can't be real. And looked it up. I'd go deeper than the goddamn, you know, 5-second bit that he would do and read through it. I'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. So really, that's how I got going. And I basically was the guy at the party that wouldn't shut up about these things, that was talking about John Kerry and George Bush being, you know, second cousins on one side, ninth cousins on the other, both Yale, both skull and bones, rigged elections, talking about Bev Harris, all these things prior to meeting these guys in like 2004, right? Prior to the second edition coming out. Mm-hmm. And it was just really fate. I was the guy also. Before you get DVD-Rs, you had 700 megabyte CD-Rs. So I would take a lot of the stuff I told you that I downloaded in these networks and put them into folders and then articles that I would print into PDF format, right? And let people just see the documents or whatever, hand those out. So one day I'm at my second job. I just landed my first ever desk job as a college dropout. It was fucking amazing, Charlie. I had a secretary. I was a graphic designer at this place called Barton Butler Graphics, but still on the pizza hustle at night. And I'm talking to my delivery guy, who I still know today. He's a concert promoter these days, very successful. And I'm talking to him and I hand him a disc with Loose Change on it. He goes, Loose Change. He goes, I know the guys that made this. Now, they were in DC when they made the original film. Corey was in the military. Dylan had moved down there to be closer to him. I had no idea they were actually from Oneonta and they had went to high school with my delivery guy at all. And I'll be honest with you, at one point after I'd seen the original, I prayed to God, and I'm not a big religious guy. I do believe in the law of attraction. I'd probably seen The Secret by then and those type of things. And I literally prayed to God, I hope to get involved with these guys and this film. I go, this is the one that's going to change the world. Lo and behold, it happens. So he looks at this. He goes, I can get Corey down here right now if you want. I'm like, really? Really? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, Dylan's going to be moving back in a couple of days. I'm like, yeah, do that. That'd be great. So Corey comes down and I talk to him for about an hour, you know, and obviously I'm pretty talkative and I got a lot of information, and he just kind of slows it down at the end. He goes, listen, man, I'm going to come back here with the script to the second edition. I want you to go through it and you tell me what's strong and what's not and what might need to be added. I'm like, all right, awesome. Okay. So he comes back, he gives it to me. I remember the next day on the bus, I had a little highlighter and I'm just like, I'm kind of like, can't even believe any of this is happening. Right. You know, I wanted to read it that night, but I was pulling crazy hours, right? The pizza shop still didn't close till 2-3 in the morning. And I had to be on the bus by before 7 to be at work by 8. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm on the bus and I'm groggy, but I'm reading through it. I still can't believe this is happening. I remember I get home a couple of days later and I have my laptop and Dylan comes over with Corey and they're both very skeptical of me. Like, they've been approached by people at this point, and I'm sure, you know, especially after being involved in this, you get approached by some wacky people. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, long story short, Dylan starts seeing how much video I have and how much he wasn't in the first edition of the film, especially with the controlled demolition stuff and other stuff I had. I basically kind of just became a part of the team right there. Became buddies with the guys. Dylan was working on it on a literal laptop. So I would get home from work and he would come back down and start editing on the laptop. And, you know, we'd watch The Simpsons or South Park together. That was a big thing. Okay. And that's kind of how I got involved. And then once the second edition was out, after we got the DVDs pressed, I was working in this print shop. So I was printing up our shirts. I also printed up all the sleeves, like the inserts for the DVD that you see on the outside. And in a short amount of time, we kind of went viral. Like, I remember we had those initial Investigate 9/11 shirts, and we had gone to a Cindy Sheehan event in Binghamton, New York. And this is even before we printed up Loose Change second edition and we're selling it. So I'm not even officially working for these guys yet still. And even when I was at the thing printing up the DVD, still not officially working, right? So we go there and we have like 3 burned copies of the DVD that we were sending the master for print. We wanted to give one to Cindy, of course, and have 2 on hand. And I forget who we gave the second one to. Well, actually, there were 2 news people there. So we gave one to the camera guy and the other guy, and so they could watch it. He interviews all 3 of us before watching it, thinks we're nuts, right? Investigate 9/11.
Right.
They watch the film. It ends up being a 2-part series on the local Fox 40 Binghamton. Now, this is before the time of embed and YouTube, so they have to put their own WMVs up. Like, they called us that night, like, after they watched. That guy was, like, blown away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, he's blown away.
First time you watch that video, if you know nothing about 9/11 and you watch that video, like, you know, like, it was one of the first ones I watched. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, you have to go take a walk around the block and just kind of let your brain settle, because you're like, this, if this is real, and I think it is, what are the ramifications of this? And then that sort of starts you, like, it creates like a real cognitive dissonance, like in a physical sense. You start to go, oh, this is what that is. This is what this feels like, where everything that I'm supposed to feel, I'm not supposed to believe, I'm seeing evidence to contradict it, and I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now. And that's how I felt when I watched it. So it's not, it's not the video you want to watch if you're like, happy feely, let's go party on a Friday night. It's the video you watch when it's like, you want to get real about what's actually happening. You throw that on and you show it to someone and you go, now what do you think? And they go, this can't be real. This can't be happening. That's how I felt about it.
I mean, again, we crashed their servers a couple times. That was the big thing. So like, you know, so many people came down and watched it, and that was kind of the snowball moment. They still didn't get it. I had told them from the beginning, this was going to, I thought we were going to get the investigation, Charlie. I thought we could win.
Of course.
Like I felt that in my heart. I still,
it's right there. Here, watch this. Go investigate it now, right? And then that's what you think. That's to me as well. That was my naivety about this. That I would say, oh well, there's the video, and it shows how all this stuff is fake, and it's making all these really great points. Let's go get it. Let's go get these guys that did it. And it just, that's where it ends.
And the crazy thing is, again, we were talking about just a few of the Hollywood people, right? Before. Yeah. There were so many others. Ashton Kutcher, I think Loose Change is asking the right questions. He tweeted that back in the day. Joe Rogan was the first one to actually buy 10 copies of the DVD. I remember when I packed them up, Joe at joerogan.net, packed them up, sent them to Joe. So many other people. So, you know, it's incredible to me. And the ramifications for us being cowards and not standing up to that evidence that was right in front of our face, to circle back to kind of the beginning, is where we're at now. And yep, that's why it's important. And the real question is, are we going to grow up in this very, very moment in history and realize that, and realize the same criminals are in charge and the same elements are in charge, and they've only gotten more power? And what they're doing to us now on a global level is so much more serious than what they've ever done before, despite their massive genocide that's repulsive. I want to say that. I'm not trying to marginalize how many people have been lost in the Middle East, how many people are going to be drone struck today and lost. I don't want to marginalize this. Yeah. But we're talking about the global regimentation of all human beings. That's a quote from Roosevelt, FDR, when he was talking about Hitler, his New World Order. Because it's not a new thing, guys. The New World Order is as old as it gets. We've been talking about it a long time. And, you know, yes, these men and their hypnotized followers call this a new order. It is not new, and it is not order. And that's actually enshrined in D.C. I put that in Invisible Empire. They got a statue of FDR with his dog with that very quote right there. A lot of people don't realize that. It's not really history repeating itself. It's improving on its tyranny.
Wow. Yeah. It's been crazy to watch the overlap, between the COVID narrative and the 9/11 narrative. And what I've realized is that the co-conspirators are the same, the media's involvement in this is, look, 9/11 wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have had the impact that it had on us if it hadn't been for the media showing those, you know, the made-for-TV event, the plane flying into the building, the fireball, the buildings coming down, the snuff film that we were forced to watch over and over again. All they pretend to put warning labels on things and say, oh, sensitive viewers, be advised that very dangerous content, you know, very, very polarizing content coming up. Fuck. How they wanted us to see this. They needed us to see this. They needed us to watch those buildings come down, so that we felt a certain way, and that feeling could then be weaponized and say, well, if you don't ever want to have this happen again, you got to give us the blank check. You might have to give up some of your rights, because we're going to do some things that we're going to need to do in order to make sure that this happens. And I remember the mood in America was, do what you need to do. Go get those motherfuckers, you know, go if take the gloves off, man. If you have to, just make sure this never happens again. And we walked right into that trap on 9/11. And what do we see again with COVID? It's the same thing. Well, you know, we might have to remove some of these rights, but it's in the best. I mean, it's in the interest of taking care of this disease and making sure it doesn't cut. You don't want to have a repeat of what we did last year, right? So you're going to have to give up and blah, 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 blah. And we see the same things over again. And I'm just screaming. They did this for 9/11. They're doing it for COVID again. The media, we're in the alternative media now, whatever that is, whatever that means to people. But the mainstream media, I think, might be the most dangerous organization. Could they have pulled off 9/11? Or could they have gotten us into these wars without the mainstream media's complicity in this?
It's a good question. Probably not, right? And it's kind of even shameful for some that would consider themselves even a little bit alternative, right? So, you know, for instance, I watched Tim Dillon this month and he had Glenn Greenwald on.
Right.
And towards the end of the interview, Tim Dillon slips in the old 9/11 question, you know, whether or not there's something. Well, I'm not saying there is, but, you know.
Tim knows there's.
Of course Tim knows. And Tim slips it in there. And this is what Greenwald says, which is extremely revealing. He goes, well, you know, kind of as a public figure, you have to kind of pick your hill to die on and what battles to fight. And then he immediately moves it over to JFK and he goes, but obviously with JFK, you know, so, you know, he knows he damn well, he's known for a damn well long time. And here's the thing. The more people like that who, quote unquote, you know, have a persona or a voice, want to play pretend, we're all going to have to fucking play pretend. If that's the best you got, what did you expect? If that's the best you got is saying, oh, look at JFK. Another thing where, you know, the supposed savior of the universe, Donnie T, was going to give us the truth not once, but twice and couldn't. We can't even reveal the deep state from 50 plus years ago. You know, that's something that just sit down and bite hard on, you know, like a shitty caramel that you didn't want from your grandparents. Like, bite down hard on that one. Think about it for a second. Just that alone, that we're not allowed to know about the murder of our president from 50 plus years ago. You want to talk 9/11? You know, to kind of even circle back to what we were talking about with this international intelligence operation, to speak to how that's done, you have a great prime example with Iran-Contra. Right. A lot of people just think, you know, drugs for guns and drugs for guns. No one drugs for guns. It was really smart. You had the Israelis come in, buy a bunch of weapons from the Ukrainians and the Czechoslovakians. They would ship the guns down. Right. Big time plausible deniability.
Yep.
Then we would train the Sandinistas with those weapons. OK. And then we would ship up drugs into our country. That's how we would pay that off in black networks. You'd have a nice little cycle interwoven of different elements in the intelligence communities around the world. You know, and people have no idea about that aspect. They just say the USA is dirty, crack cocaine. Right. You know, the oversimplification of these things and the fact that people have become so apathetic to just about everything in life and so obsessed with this motherfucking thing. And their social media clout and their stupid fucking Instagram. It's hard, man. It's hard.
It is hard. It's hard to get through to people. I saw, you know, you see that, I think there's this belief that like, oh, well, you know, those things happened in the 80s, Iran-Contra, that happened in the 80s. Listen, Trump brought the same people back. He brought Elliot Abrams and John Bolton, and these cocksuckers were running this operation. You know, I mean, not only is it the same operation being run again, it's in some cases the same people. So it, like when you mentioned Glenn Greenwald sort of knowing, you know, there's, you know, well, he can't really get into it. I think that is the problem. I think the biggest problem that we've been facing with regard to 9/11, and also we'll take it this way with COVID as well, has been the self-censorship. The people that know that there's something wrong, know that they've worked very hard to get to where they are and don't want to see it all come down just for making one comment about something when they can kind of sidestep it if they need to. I understand what Glenn is doing. I don't respect that. I like Glenn Greenwald for the most part. I can say I like him, and that doesn't mean I endorse every single thing he says, but
he's better than most, right?
He's better than most. And I like the fact that he walked away from The Intercept when they started censoring him. I mean, the case can be made that he probably should have never gone into business with Pierre Omidyar anyway, but whatever. You need money, you get money. That guy's got money. You do what you can. But it exposes a flaw in the system, which is if you're sitting around waiting for these people to talk about this publicly because you know they know it, you may be waiting a long time, because there are certain instances where they know that if they say that, they become instantly radioactive. And they might not want to do that for a variety of reasons. One might be money, and one might be comfort and everything. But another thing might be that they have calculated that they're more valuable being where they are and being able to talk. And if they bring up a 9/11 or a COVID backstory or whatever, that they know that they remove themselves from that. So they've made a strategic decision. I can kind of understand it. I don't love any of that. I can sort of maybe understand that way of thinking, but I am of the opinion that if you know 9/11 was what it is, and you're in a position where people can hear your voice, you have to talk about it. You just have to talk about it for your soul. Fuck your career. You have to talk about that. It's so important, because you know what? What are you going to do? You saving yourself for 20 years from now? You'll be in a gulag, man. if we continue with this.
Not 20 years. I mean, exactly. We're on the 20th anniversary. Too many people have shut up. You guys know about this. Stop playing pretend. Stop. Yeah. You got to put on the big boy pants. If we can't bring those people to justice, everybody's talking about Fauci's going to go to prison and all these people are going to go to prison. Again, the best we had in this generation was Scooter Libby, and your fucking guy Trump pardoned him. That was right. And that was not great. Like there were plenty of people above Scooter Libby, the chief of staff for Dick Cheney, that deserved to go to prison. I promise you. And that's the best we got.
You got one guy from the Project for a New American Century that they threw in jail on a technicality and then walked him back. Jason, you are one of the top shows on Rockfin. I mean, top five, you, Whitney Webb, Jimmy Dore, top three right there, right? You're doing amazing work there. How can people connect with you? How can people follow your work outside of Rockfin? Obviously, this show is going to be on Rockfin, so it's easy to switch over. And my statistics and diagnostics when I get into the back end of Rockfin tells me that the largest percentage of my viewers are also viewers of yours too. So I know we've got a great deal of overlap here. What's the best place for people to find your work?
I mean, rockfin.com/Jason Burmis has been great to me. But if you type in Jason Burmis anywhere, I always encourage people to follow me on Twitter. You see that down below, because sometimes I'll tweet stuff that I don't end up covering on videos, right? Because I cover so much or I get involved. YouTube, of course. But again, I'm openly having to self-censor there. And what's nice about this technology is that I'm triple streaming. So the things I can't say on YouTube, I say, hey, come on over. You know, 99%+ of my stuff is free. If you want to support me, great. You can now get a year long over on Rockfin for $100. You endorse me or Charlie, you get both of our content. I think that's great. And look, it's a platform that's empowering me through free speech. I'd be live streaming from Rockfin at these protests instead of YouTube as soon as the infrastructure's here for an app, right? Look, I've always encouraged people to take all of my work and share it. I want people to see the documentary films. I really do truly believe they're my best stuff, right? They're the stuff that's most effective in people opening their eyes. You know, I haven't seen somebody that's watched Fabled Enemies start to finish and then been like, totally believe the Al-Qaeda thing. totally believe the Al-Qaeda. Never once. I remember, you know, Charlie Skelton of, you know, he used to write for The Guardian. He was one of the first mainstream people to talk about Bilderberg over a decade ago. You know, the first time I was really getting down and talking to him, and he brought it up, and I go, dude, you need to watch my movie Fabled Enemies, because, you know, the things that you were saying are just not factual. And I would tell him these things, and he couldn't believe it. And I remember when he watched it, he DM'd me afterwards like, Jesus Christ, man. He's like, phenomenal job. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, obviously there's a lot more going on. So I hope that my documentary film career is not over. I think it's tough these days, especially with all the censorship. Could a film like Loose Change go viral? All my 9/11 stuff is getting age restricted on YouTube. When I say even my 9/11 stuff, we're talking about eyewitness accounts. My Barry Jennings interview has now been age restricted. My Anthony Saltalamacia piece, where I don't say anything. It's just him telling his story. An eyewitness at the World Trade Center that saved lives and was in the basement is now being age restricted by YouTube. Like you said, they'll play the snuff films all the time.
He's the guy that said that they left the OEM, like the the mayor's office in World Trade Center 7, that there was still hot coffee sitting there when they walked by, right?
And he was in there with Michael Hess, and Michael Hess was the right-hand man of Rudy Giuliani. Both are on film that day inside World Trade Center 7. Both gave interviews, Hess on the phone and Barry Jennings in person after they got pulled out. And obviously, we got that interview with Barry Jennings that is now infamous, and James Corbett has done an entire documentary film on.
Yeah, if people are wondering, Barry Jennings is the black gentleman wearing the nice suit who's covered in ash, who was talking about, went down in the basement, huge explosion. He's that guy who...
Well, he wouldn't even get in the basement. So like for the huge explosion, for those that don't know, what's really interesting about Barry's story, especially after the fact and the explosions, is that when they were taken out, he says he was stepping over dead bodies in Building 7.
Yeah.
Now, the line has always been nobody died in Building 7. Hard to believe, especially when you hear their account. Basically, they go up. They were late to the Office of Emergency Management, this new center where everything was supposed to be derived out of, where he was supposed to go in case of something like this. Mm-hmm. When they got up there, he said things like half-eaten sandwiches, coffee that was still hot, as you mentioned. So it had been quickly evacuated. As they tried to get down, he says they were the elevators were no longer working. They got onto about the eighth floor, and an explosion from underneath them, okay, went off prior to either building collapsing. That's when they went back up. They were later rescued by the firefighters after both towers collapsed, and they came down, and he said he was stepping over people. I mean, it's his own words. You know, the whole thing is out there uncensored, without any cuts whatsoever. People can try to say that I haven't done my due diligence. I have. I've interviewed so many people on this. I've traveled the country. I've talked to eyewitnesses. I've read the documents. I've gone through the dark overlord stuff that nobody else has done, that most people aren't aware of. It's out there. You know, it's the truth. It's very upsetting and disappointing, but the sooner you confront the truth and you don't bask in your willful ignorance, the sooner, you know, we can try to build a better world and hold these people accountable. Because if we don't, man, their fourth industrial revolution for us, their transhumanist movement, it ain't pretty. I promise it's not pretty. It's not what you think. It's not some cool sci-fi movie that you fell in love with as a kid. I promise.
Yeah. And if you're young enough that are too young to really have remembered 9/11, living through it at you know, as a young adult or an adult, and this is, and you're kind of coming to this, start with Jason's movies. It will explain things in a way that I think will help you. It'll ramp you up real quick. It gets into a lot of the details. 9/11 is one of the most important events in American history. It was a turning point in the reduction of our liberties. It set us on the course to allow things like the COVID operation to take place. And thank you, Jason, for all the work that you've done. If people are interested, you can follow Jason's work at, like he mentioned, over at Rockfin. You can catch this episode at Rockfin as well, because we know we won't be censored there. And take the additional step of sharing this this episode with your friends and families, because if it's got my name and Jason's name in the title, we're certainly not going to get any love from the algorithms. Thanks, everybody, and we will catch you all next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.